for DJC. Jerry, M0TR. How you doing today? Been kind of a lousy morning this morning. We went out to get some groceries and it was not the most pleasant experience.
So far we've got 1.78 inches of rain. It says it's 45 outside, but it feels like 41. And I believe that. I went out there a little while ago and checked on the chickens. Checked on the girls, I should say. And by the way, we got one rooster now. Accidentally. And it was pretty dang chilly out there, I can tell you that for sure.
It felt pretty cool this morning. I went down to Walmart at lunchtime. We got a late start. And it rained pretty hard there for a little bit, but it cleared up enough where we could get in and get out. And we got our final shots on Monday. This past Sunday. Just a little bit of arm soreness, and that was it for both of us. So glad to get that out of the way finally.
Would you get the Pfizer or Moderna?
We both got the Moderna. We got it at CVS in Clemson. And we were scheduled to get the Pfizer, but that was during that weather situation where the planes were grounded temporarily and that sort of thing. They couldn't get the vaccine in. And in addition to that, I couldn't get us scheduled in Greenville. We were scheduled to go to Columbia to that drive-through Gamecock Park area. And I wasn't looking forward to driving to Columbia and back. Well, actually twice, since I'd have to do the second vaccine. Well, you could do the second vaccine anywhere, I think, but getting it scheduled was a hassle. But when we actually, daughter got us signed up for the Moderna at CVS and signed us up for the first. They automatically signed you up for the second one. So we got both of our appointments booked, mine on a Saturday and hers on a Sunday. But no mind of that, it's a lot better traveling to Clemson twice than going to Columbia.
I just wanted to avoid that as long as I could. Well, I see somebody posted a station in Botswana, and I was going to go up and see if you're still around. My luck, it's not. Dick said that he was on 15 meters, but no joy now. He posted at 11-something, and I didn't look at the email since then. I did, however, see Ghana on at this morning on 17, which I've worked at before, but I don't think I've worked the Alpha 25. And there's not many that I haven't, but I still got a few to go, probably about 35 or so. And they're few and far between.
17 to work, is it a pretty decent band? Yeah, that's something. A lot of these new bands were not available when I stopped on my HF operation.
Jerry, that's my very favorite. Really nice people. I've never run into anything there bad. It's good on CW. It's excellent on sideband. And I used to just love to work CW on 17. It should be coming back, and I'm seeing a few posts. There's one from, that's probably FT8, though, more likely. Maybe not, 18132. That's probably sideband. He's the Western Sahara, but I've seen him many, many times. Sierra Oscar 1 Whiskey Sierra. And direct only, of course. I'm not much on sending cards out anymore. I just don't do it. But But Africa during the day is not too unusual. That's on the very eastern coast of Africa, kind of just below Morocco.
Africa, the African country is always outside of South Africa, and a couple of other ones that were pretty active. African countries are always hard for me to work. When I had a vertical and I could work them on 15, but getting that time zone straight, it was always hard for me, because I think it's about an 8-9 hour time difference. I have to watch that gray line propagation thing to know when it would be working then, because it was hard to get everything set up. But I could do it on 20 meters idly, but I couldn't do it on 15 very well. 17 sounds like a good band, especially on CW. You wouldn't have to have a big antenna, and it's high enough up, and probably didn't have all the junk you have on 20, I guess.
I think the time would be more different than, supposed to be working on Zulu time anyways. Like right now, it's 1838 Zulu, and it's 2:38 here. So there's a 6-hour difference. And you hear the Canary Islands Echo Alpha 8s all the time. And they're just a little bit... a few more miles over to the Western Sahara and Morocco. Yeah, I had a beam up in Kansas, and I had a rotatable dipole on it for 12 and 17. It was a Mosley beam, and it just worked terrific for that. Don't have any gain, of course, like something with gain on it on those bands, but I had 10, 15, and 20 up there on that TA-33 Mosley, if I needed it. But I added, cost a couple hundred bucks for that other beam, or other radio to put on it. And it just worked great at 50 feet. And, of course, from Kansas, you're taking another hop from Kansas to the East Coast, and then probably a couple more to get to Africa out there. That's another 3,000 miles. It's a pretty fur piece, as they say down here.
Work, when I was up in the Charlotte area, I didn't have any trouble working into Japan. Some parts of Africa, but I normally had to go down to our club station. When we had a tri-bander up about 50 or 60 feet. It was actually in a shopping mall. And, they had every once in a while, one of the guys would bring his Alpha 77 down there, and we'd work there, but I very seldom ran more than 100 watts. Most time I ran 100 there at the station. I go down there Saturday morning, nobody was using it, so I said, heck, I'll just go down there and use the pub station, use that, had a Mosley up there too. I think it was a Mosley tri-bander. And it was a good antenna. And I worked several, I'd go down in the morning, Sunday, worked several African stations, and I just enjoyed it. And of course, it was a great station too. I want to say it was a 520, TS-520 station or something like that. It might have had JCO equipment, but it had two finals, but it had good audio in the, of course, the CW had a bench paddle there, and that's what I always used. And even though I'm left-handed, I always use my bench or right-handed, so I could write calls down left-handed.
GR. Yeah, it says it's 76.8 degrees east-northeast, and it's 4,222 miles, Jerry. So that's not bad. And but you'd probably have to take two skips to get over there. But... It's pretty common. I've heard that Sierra Zero many, many, many times. And it's not too far from the Canaries, and they're pretty common. Yeah, that old TS-520, I never had any experience with the tube radios. I come in just after they were going out. And I did have one that a gentleman gave me, but I traded it on a 2-meter rig. It had two finals, and the big ham radio shop up in Overland Park, Kansas, they said they're just not worth much anymore, and that was way, way back, probably in the 80s. And they really wasn't interested too much in taking it, and I finally convinced them to trade me for a 2-meter radio that was worth, back then, probably $400. But I just didn't have any use for it. I liked my old Kenwood TS-140. I knew how to operate it. That's kind of the way I stay with this TS-590 that I got now. I know how to operate it, and it works well, and I just don't need to spend a bunch of money on anything else, because if I hear it, I can generally work it 99% of the time.
I had a 120, I think, Kenwood. I think that was the first one. 120, yes, I guess, was one of the first ones that came out. The power slide was bigger than the radio, just about as back. It was small enough you could probably use it as a mobile rig if you had a truck. I really enjoyed that radio. I had an ICOM 201 before that. I tried that, but I didn't like the ICOM very well at all. But the Kenwoods and Jay-Z's that ran the 6246Bs were, those were good radios, and they cost you an arm and a leg, you know, because I didn't swap around on frequency, but I did enjoy the ability to change bands and not have to worry about tuning the rig up, that sort of thing, when I had, after I got that 120. I might have had a 130 as well, Tom. I don't remember now, but that 120, I worked a lot of stations with that radio, and it was good. It was simple, but it was a good rig. The SDR that everybody's using now, of course, that's what this 9700 is on VHF and UHF. But I'm not quite as concerned about that as I am on the lower bands. I'm not sure. I know a lot of people love those 7300s. I'm not really sure I wouldn't go with a 590 or something like that. It's a good radio. It's got great filtering in it, too, as well. And Kenwoods have always been known for good audio.
I had a TS-590S, and I still have it. And, gosh, I give over $1,500 when they first come out for it, Jerry. So if you decide you want one of those, well, come on over, and I'll talk to you about that. I used it for about a year, and they come out with the TS-590SG, and it had a couple of things I wanted, and like I had a direct place I could plug in my man scope, you know, but then you still had to buy a dongle for it and have the smarts to do all the computer stuff to get it hooked up, and I had a good friend help me with that, thank God. I never got it. The newer ones now, you can just plug in a displayer. They have it on there, I think. But I just about decided to let that one go. I just plug it in once a month, fire it up, and make sure everything's working, and then it's covered up with cloth over there sitting in the corner. And I thought I was going to put two stations on the air at once, and I don't want to fool with it. I'm getting too old for that. But I'll tell you, that's the secondary receiver in the TS-990, which is over $7,000. So they think pretty highly of it, or they wouldn't put it in there.
They sure would. And they've, Kenwood just doesn't, they don't change models very often. They'll keep a model on the market for a long time. And a good friend of mine, Phil Parton, he's a national amateur sales guy for Kenwood. I've known him for about 25 years. I asked him that a couple of years ago. He said, well, he said, we just don't, he said, if it works, we get all the bugs worked out of it, if it works, we just leave it alone. And they, Kenwood discontinued a couple of their handheld radios, or one of the handheld radios, two of them, back in December, which is unusual. I think it's more due to that factory fire they had with those that AKM factory fire in Japan had more to do with that, and they do have a strong presence in land mobile radio too. That may be what the deal is with that. Everybody's always said, and been saying for the last 25 years, how much longer is Kenwood going to stay in amateur business? And I thought, I said, well, they've been saying it for 25, 30 years, I guess, and they still seem to be clicking along, and they'll introduce a new model about every, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years or so. They'll have a new one come out every other year, like some of the manufacturers do.
GR. Oh, N4DJC, I think I got that right, Jerry. Your call sometimes is a tongue twister for me, or my mind, pea brain. Well, I just looked it up, and I do have that Alpha 25 in Botswana on 40 and 20. But they say I don't have Rwanda, and I'm certain I've worked that before. I just am not that extremely interested in them to go back and go through hundreds of cards. So I might look someday and see if I've got it. But it all boils down to money, if you're willing to pay to get the awards. But they got to have something for their effort, so I don't mind that. Pakistan, I haven't worked that. Scarborough Reef, I haven't worked that. Some of those places, they're just nobody out there, you know, like Korea, North Korea. But that's the only place I really ever had trouble working was down in around Thailand and in that area, you know, Tibet and stuff like that, from Kansas or from here. If you got a beam, you could do that, but I'm not about to do that. Well, the nicest radio I've seen is the TS-890S that Kenwood just come out with in the last year. But it's over $3,000, and that's just an enormous amount of money when my 590 does everything I want it to do, you know?
I remember, of course, back in the 80s, normally you know, 10 through 160 or 10, a lot of radios still had 160 on them then too. You know, like a 520 or a KZ-101, ZD, and that sort of stuff. Those radios were around $900 or $1,000 in $1,980. That may be equivalent to $3,000 today, I don't know. But they didn't have the bells and whistles these new ones do, but yeah, you know, like I've only got one radio right now, and UHF and VHF is all I'm fooling with right now, and I might add a HF rig to it at some point in time after the weather warms up and I get a look at my situation in my backyard and see what I may have to do to get some type of antenna put up, but we got some work to do on the house as well. But $3,000, I mean, there's a big difference between paying $1,500 and $3,000 for a rig. I mean, that's a quantum leap. If I were a lot younger and had room for a nice tower or good wire antennas and had enough room for that sort of thing, I might consider if I was in my 40s. But being 70, I'm not real sure if I'd ever get the good out of it if I were able to afford it.
They have the band scopes on them and everything. They're just unimaginable what you can do with them. And then you got to have some acreage out there, too, for if you're going to put up wire antennas. I'm very fortunate. I have great neighbors, and they allowed me to put up that Carolina Wyndham, the full-length one. But I have one limb up there by my Ballon, and it's bugging me, and it goes up 90 degrees, and then it kicks over to the right, because it's caught on a limb there. It's just a small limb, but there's a limb supporting it that's probably 10, 15 foot long. It's small, but I'd like to get rid of it, and I'm afraid if you rented one of those buckets, that's going to be a $300 or $400 limb, and I just can't quite commit to that yet.
The How high in the air did you say the limb was?
35 feet, Jerry.
Oh, that's a stretch there. I have seen guys that, depending on how big it is, I have seen guys that have a rope. They'll throw the rope over the limb. They have this like a little, it's like a chain on a chainsaw and saw one off that way. But I don't know if I've ever seen anybody throw one 35 feet or not. But, and the guy that cuts my grass has one of these little power trimmers. It's got a little chainsaw mechanism on the end of it. But he can get up with it and get on a 14-foot ladder and reach another 10 feet. But that's too far up for him. But like you said, a bucket thing would easily be $300, maybe more than that. Who knows?
This is 10-0-TR. Yeah, I'm sure you're right. I think Bob said that it was $400 to $500 up there to get one. He used to have a neighbor had a bucket truck and he'd loan it to him because he's got a huge setup up there. A 40-meter beam and the whole nine yards and a log periodic. And that was nice, but he's since moved or something. But I don't have that down here. But I have one of those chains like you're talking about, and I had a tree climber here before I put that antenna up, and he cut down a huge oak tree in the back, but he wouldn't be interested in coming out for just one limb. They want to do jobs that they're going to make $1,000 on, and he took down probably an 80 or 90 foot oak tree here that was kind of in my way, and I was afraid it might get in a storm, it could reach the house and the generator, so I had him take it out. And he had just a weight in a little bag, and he'd swing that round and round, and you wouldn't believe how accurate that guy was. And then they would pull stuff up to him, his saw and all of that, to cut that sucker down with. He had more guts than a packing house. I used to work up high, but just to climb a tree like that. I had tree climbers and could climb, but I never did go that high. And I can't possibly do something like that anymore. But I've got a shooter, and I tried shooting a sinker over the top of it. That's what it amounts to. But the dang thing went too high. And mine don't have a pressure adjustment, so you just gotta, if you want to put 40 pounds in it, put the regulator at 40 pounds. But normally, I put about 100 pounds on it, or 125, and it'll shoot that 2-ounce sinker clear out of sight, Jerry. But I tried it once, and I got over that limb all right, but then it come down over 3 or 4 others. I thought maybe I could take that little chain thing like you're talking about that I got at Harbor Freight, and it looks like a chainsaw blade and got two little wooden handles on the end. Pull that up there with a rope and then cut that off. Have you ever seen that done? I don't know how effective those things are.
I've never seen anybody personally do it, but I've seen videos of people doing it, and I know that people have done it. I just don't know. Depending on the size of the limb, and being that high, I don't know how well it would work, but you just get it, pull it back and forth if you got enough, if the chain length is long enough so it doesn't slip off or anything like that. Once you get started on it, it's just like anything else. It would cut it pretty easily. But, I've had my best luck taking trees down and getting stuff done when there's already a tree guy here in the neighborhood. They were cleaning off the lot next door to this last year, and the tree guy was down there, and I said, well, I had a sweet guy that was about 60 feet tall, and right on the property line, right on the neighbor's property line. I tried to get the neighbor to let me cut it down when he put his new fence up, and he wouldn't do it. Well, his wife wouldn't let him do it, and he's got so big, it was encroaching into him, and I said, I'm going to get that thing down. So I asked the guy, I said, well, you take that sweet gum down? He said, yep. And he didn't top it out or anything. Those guys got down there, Tom. out of his backyard, and they cut that thing up about chest high, and it just bent on over, just fell, didn't hit anything, just hit the ground, didn't damage the fence. And of course, they saw it. I have not had the stump ground yet. They cut off flush up the ground almost. The guy charged me $400 for it, and I said, you know what? I said, if I'd had somebody else, they'd probably charge me $1,000. They cut it up and hauled it off as well. Anybody else would charge me $1,000 to do it, I guess.
No, but I can't remember what I paid for this big tree to be taken down, but it wasn't cheap, and I had, he took down two trees, actually, and that old boy wasn't cheap, but the other guys were going to do it with a bucket and just let it drop, and the way he done it was good, and he didn't damage my driveway or anything, so I guess it was worth the money. If it hits your house, it'd be a real pain in the gluteus maximus, I'm sure. And I see so many houses down here that get hit by trees, and I thought it was, in my way of thinking, preventative maintenance. And I didn't want anything to be able to reach the house. Now, if you get a tornado, it'll pick the trees up and drop it on the house. God help us. But, this one was just too close, and it would come right through our bedroom, and it was kind of tipped over a little bit on an angle, and it just needed to come out. But yeah, those tree climbers aren't cheap. I seen a deal. The pickup truck was pulling the other day up on Wade Hampton, and it had a bucket on it, and it was on just a towable trailer, and he'd rented it. But I don't think it'd go that high. I got one of those saws that's on a pole, but they only reach up about 10 feet. And I want to have a bucket and go up there right to it and just cut a little bit off at a time because I can't lift anything, Jerry.
The beauty of if there's somebody in the neighborhood already trimming trees up or something like that already in the neighborhood, you can just, say, how about come here and do this for me? Because they already got the equipment there. They'll charge you much because they don't have to make a special trip. And I'm cheap enough where I won't usually do something unless I can get a reasonable deal on it. And the last tree I had taken down, I guess, time prior to this one, probably cost $700 or $800. But, yeah, the sweet gums, all they do is they just make a mess of those balls all over everything. Tears up the lawnmowers and gets the belts off of them, that sort of thing, and push out there walking around, you'll slip and fall on them. And that was the last tree in my backyard. I don't have a single tree in my backyard or front yard. Now, I've got crepe myrtles along the side, but that's it. And the guy next door just clearing the lot off, he hadn't done a thing since he had that little bit of tree clearing done. He hadn't been back up here since then, so I don't know where he's going. Let it sit idle over there tonight, but he's got a 90 or 100 foot tree over there, and it just doesn't look healthy at all to me, so I'm not sure if he's going to try to save that one or not. But I just didn't want them in the yard. I had about 6 or 7 in the yard. Every time I turn around, they damage them when they're landscaping it. They would, they damage the bark on them, and the tree would die and get hollow. And I had probably 6 I've taken down over the years, and this one's going to be one of the same things. It probably gets to the point where the roots were dying or something like that. Have a heck of a time because it might break halfway down, but it didn't break. It was, when I went down, it wasn't hollow, thank goodness. I was glad to get rid of it. That maybe you could find somebody that's in the area already, and they come by and get a regular bucket truck and get up and get that thing out of the way for you.
Sure. Well, Jerry, I did. About 4 or 5 days ago, there was a guy climbing the tree 2 houses to the east of us. And I went up there and I talked to the Mexican fellow on the ground. And he hollered up at the guy in the tree, and the guy in the tree spoke good English. And he said, yeah, I'll stop by over there. And I had to give him $100 to cut that one limb off. And it had been an easy climb for him. He might have had to clear off 2 or 3 little tiny limbs. But they said they'd be over there when they got done, and they never bothered to even come by the house, Jerry.
DRN4DJC. You know, Tom, these guys that are taking trees down and doing limbing and that sort of thing, they've got, a lot of these guys just got so much work nowadays, they won't take every little job, but, you know, $100, you know, whatever, to take one limb down, it sounds like a good deal to me. I mean, if you climb up, you know, 35 feet in that high up for somebody to do it for a living.
All he had to do is walk over here. He had the hooks on and everything, and just shinny up that tree and whack it off. It's not over, I don't think it's over 3 inches, maybe 4 inches at the very most. And you could just let it drop, and I'd take care of the rest. But like I said, he shouldn't have told me he'd have come over here and then just didn't show up. He could have said, hey, we're not interested, and I'd have went on my way. I just drove my riding lawnmower up there and talked to him. But at any rate, as I say, there's people like that. They walk among us, Jerry.
Many of them. I learned my tree lessons when we were living in Fort Vail when Hugo came through. I think it took down 21 trees in my yard. It took me forever. They were mostly pines, so it took me forever to get those things cleaned up. And after that, I didn't want any trees in my yard more than nothing any bigger around than my arm. That way, if it got too big, I could at least cut it down with a regular saw. But nothing encroaching over the house. And I asked the builder when he was finishing his house up to get those trees down, but they didn't want to spend the money to do it. They could have cleared them off with a dozer before they laid the foundation, but the house was already about 50% complete when we were looking to move here. So he didn't want to go to that effort. I had two cherry trees in the backyard, had a couple of oak trees, small oak trees in the backyard, had two sweet gums, had two hickory nut trees on the side yard here that was dropping hickory nuts on my son's truck when he was still in college. So, yeah, it's just, we got those things taken in. Those things were expensive. First one cost me about $400. The next time they came around a couple years later, he wanted $800 for it. And there was one other tree, I think it might have been in the front yard. I don't remember now, but I got them all in now. I don't have any in the backyard. So if I got to put up a wire or anything, I'm going to put up a fiberglass telescoping pole.
I'll tell you, from our experience with sweet gum trees, wow. They're a beautiful tree in the fall, but, oh, I hate those balls on the ground. In a dire age, it'd be easy to take a fall on them, and it hurts my bad foot anyway to step on one. The daughter's got some of them over at Lake Lyman, and we got hickory nuts out the kazoo here, and the oak trees that drop acorns, we got those, and they just fill my wife's strawberry garden. And she swears those things all the time, but there's just nothing you can do about it unless you take out another big oak tree.
Hopefully the guy that's clearing the lot got most of the I think there may be water acres. They have a small, almost like a pin oak acorn, small, tiny acorns. And he cleared off some of them along the edge there. We still got two sweet gums that are not in our yard, but they're on the right of way. And they're two, like a pair of twins, and they were dropping the sweet gum balls out there in the road. My wife and I used to walk around the neighborhood. She used to walk 5 or 6 miles a day. And we were out there one afternoon walking down there, and she slid on one of those things, and she took a fall, and she's lucky she didn't break her arm. But she skinned herself up. And this, you know, this thing, she hit those things. She's like roller skates. She just kept running. I tried to catch her, and I don't think that's where she hurt her shoulder, but she might have. But she got a rotator cuff problem now, and she's not going to get anything done about it. But I think that either started or finished it off one of the other. Those things are dangerous. And I fell out there too myself once, skinning up my knuckles, elbows, and whole thing, and I said, yeah, we don't walk in the neighborhood anymore just because of that. And I tried to get the county to take them down. They said, no, they wouldn't take them down. And then the guy that's cleaning out the lot, I asked him, I said, you come back again? I said, you know, well, I'll go in with you and get these things out. I'd love to get rid of those darn things, be done with them.
Yeah. Well, the grass is really green out there with that, you know, showing 1.84 inches, and it was sprinkling a little bit ago. So that's good. I put twice as much fertilizer as I needed, the daughter tells me, so it ought to grow up good. Jerry, Bernice has got dinner about ready for us. I'm sitting here watching Port Protection Alaska and messing around on the computer and talking to you. And there, my daughter says men don't multitask well. How do you like that? Anyways, good talking to you, Jerry, and hope to see you come up here someday. N4DJC, N0TR, 73, Jerry. Have a good day.
It's better. I'd love to do that and give us about 3 or 4 weeks on this COVID thing. I'd love to do that. I'd love to see your station and meet you in person. Let's see, you guys have a good afternoon, and don't eat too much, which is, you're probably going to do whatever you're going to do anyway. That's probably falling on deaf ears, I suppose. Y'all both have a good afternoon. Good talk to you, Tom. N4DJC clear.
Well, we should be clear on the antibodies now. We got ours on the 2nd. It's the 16th, so I think our 2 weeks is up, Jerry, so when you get clear, we'll make it a date. 73, Jerry, N0TR.